Okay, hi everybody, and we're drawing to a close on this first section having to do with the rules for white magic as regards the mental plane. We've been studying for the past several past several programs in Rule 5, a sequence of character building, right motive, service, meditation. A technical study of the science of the centers and breathing exercises. These first six are all within our possibility of attainment. However, Master DK said that learning the techniques of the will, or the technique of the will, the development of the power to employ time and the arousing of the Kundalini fire are factors for which we are not yet ready, but he did give a few hints toward the end of rule number five. And these were that we should learn to organize the life, that we should do more than just organize time, we should learn simultaneity of action, and also that we should use the serpent of wisdom to discover the inhibitions and the problems induced by the serpent of illusion, and then the Kundalini would mount upward to the place of power. Okay, so that takes us now to rule number six. Excuse the light coming in here and back and forth. I'll just do my best to stay in the light, but not within the blinding light when thinking of these issues. Now, the next rule is not a long one, at least the commentary upon it is not long, from page 209 to 216 or so. So maybe in a couple of programs or so we can make our commentary on it, and then that will be the conclusion of the work for the six rules of the mental plane. Obviously, I realize how much has been left out, or maybe how many opportunities to say something wiser have been passed by, but I'll just keep going. Persistence, and hope that these commentaries will offer you some new thoughts or stimulate something in you that will make assimilation and application of the rule easier for you. So, rule six, the devas of the lower four feel the force when the eye opens. They are driven forth and lose their master. And then there's a section on the work of the eye. And that's basically what we're dealing with here. When the master of these devic forces is the personality, obviously they are used for selfish purposes. When the soul and incarnation, or the disciple managing to focus himself upon the soul on its own plane, let's call that plane for the moment, the higher mental plane, then a completely different quality of selfless creativity supervenes. So the work of the eye. We have for consideration now one of the simplest of the rules for magic, yet at the same time one of the most practical and one upon which the entire success of all magical work depends. Well, maybe it'll be possible for us to at least understand what has to be done. Hopefully that is the case. Right. I would like to point out, he says, to the investigating aspirant, assuming we are using the Mercury in the right way in the fifth ray, that the key to the situation depicted in the rules lies in this rule, in the rule, lies in the word contemplation found in the preceding one. Thus the heart, the throat, and the eye allied for triple service. And contemplation is that factor of meditative activity, which is assigned to the I. Therefore, let us study that word with care and seek its accurate definition. Now, if one reads from intellect to intuition, one of the best descriptions of contemplation is explained or is given. So I always come back to that because somehow Alice Bailey has managed very well in a book of her own writing to offer clarity on this phase of meditation, you know, concentration, meditation, contemplation, which is so often inadequately understood. Okay. To contemplate involves steady vision, one pointedly directed towards a specific objective. The soul or solar angel might be regarded as gazing in three directions. We have to learn to identify as the solar angel within the egoic lotus, and its vision becomes our vision. We, the soul-infused personality, begin to see as the soul sees. So that is the objective here. We begin to see as the soul sees. So now the soul or solar angel might be regarded as gazing in three directions. Now sometimes, you know, I substitute the angel of the presence, or at least when that part of the solar angel which infuses the egoic lotus begins to turn to the task of making it possible for the advancing would-be initiate to touch or to receive energy from the monad, then we can begin to call it the angel of the presence. We name it by its function, but it really is an aspect of the solar angel which is invested in the egoic lotus. I think the entirety of the solar angel is not there. Those great beings have the capacity to be conscious on more than one level simultaneously, so a kind of emanative self-investment within that body composed of higher mental matter is possible for the solar angel, as well as the retention of its activity, probably on the Buddhic plane, although, you know, we can't say that we can limit it there, but it seems to have descended again into the cosmic physical plane as a kind of fall and anchored itself on the Buddhic plane in order to be for the advancing human being a kind of heart of fiery love. Many are the names of the solar angels, and we have discuss this elsewhere. Okay, so three directions, and I think I'll just make this a little bit yellow. So the solar angel directs its gaze towards the light supernal, towards that central life or energy which holds hid within itself the purpose and plan towards which all being tends. Now, I think, you know, that is the monadic area, the shambolic area. The monadic shambolic area. And let us review that the monad of the solar angel is effectively other than the monad of the human being. I mean, ultimately, all monads are one, ultimately, but in terms of emanative descent and particular tasks, the consultation of the Solar Angel with its own monad is distinct from the consultation of the human being, when it becomes possible, with its own monad. Monads are apparently diverse and ultimately one. Anyway, the Solar Angel turns its attention towards the purpose and plan towards which all being tends. So basically, you know, the Solar Angel knows much about the divine plan and divine purpose that the human being cannot possibly know yet. DK says, I know not how to express this more clearly, what that directive force may be, what is the secret of being itself, is only revealed at the more advanced initiations. I mean, our interest in these matters are, I hope, I'll call it reasonably speculative, or speculative in a reasonable manner. And is only finally grasped when the causal body itself, the Karana Sarira, as it is called, disintegrates and the final limitation slips away, final limitation for entry into the realm of the spiritual triad in full consciousness, or, well, extensive consciousness, let's say. The Karana Sarira disintegrates and final limitation slips away. With this direction of the Solar Angel's vision, we need not concern itself. Now, obviously, you know, DK was talking about doing a number of things at the same time. The Solar Angel can do a number of things simultaneously. SMLY. I'm going to try to make one for that. Simultaneously. Right. Okay. So we have to learn from our betters, remembering that the Solar Angel in the previous solar system was a kind of a human being of the time. I can't help this line of light coming right down my face here. But okay, I'm just letting you know with my little picture up in the left-hand corner here that I'm with you and present with you, thinking with you. Now, another area of vision toward which the Solar Angel directs its gaze, it directs its gaze over the kingdom wherein the Solar Angel remains supreme over the world of souls, of or egoic impulses, of hierarchical work, and a pure thought. So much has been purified from the kind of thought the human being will often have dealing with quite unreal concrete matters of the lower 18 subplanes. So the Solar Angel is looking above towards Shambhala, towards being, towards the plan and purpose for the planet, at least that. And the Solar Angel is looking out over the kingdom, the fifth kingdom in nature, since it is a member of the fifth creative hierarchy. There's a resonance between that hierarchy and that kingdom. It's looking out over the fifth kingdom, the kingdom of souls. This is, says the Tibetan, the kingdom of God, the world of heavenly being. And we might say it starts at the higher mental plane and goes further, really. Soul is such an interesting word, and It is a factor which pervades all of the universe, but it is differently limited at various stages of immersion in matter, or immersion in one's own self-reflection, we might call it, because matter is the self-reflection of God, the seer. Since I began to do this kind of work, I've developed a different idea about what matter may be. It's not something that's out there. It's an aspect, it's a perception, it's an aspect of myself in the larger sense, which of which I become aware, and that becoming aware is matter. Without the perception, would matter exist? That's a big question. Okay, it is the state whereof disciples are becoming increasingly aware, wherein initiates work and from which the masters in their graded ranks direct the evolutionary process of the planet. This is the kingdom of souls. And when we are able at last to slip out of the limitations, I do see the light, don't I? I'm going to try to move just, no. There's just no way. Okay. All right, just this blinding light, we'll just have to live with that. Maybe it's proof that I've finally made it onto the fixed cross, you know, which begins with Taurus, a blinding light. Okay. These two directions in which the soul looks constitute the world of its spiritual experience and the object of its aspiration. All right. So we must never forget that. We must not imagine that the solar angel is entirely preoccupied with the affairs and progress of the personality which it is supervising. Okay, onward. Let it not be forgotten that the spiritual man, the solar angel, or at least, let's say, the solar angel is certainly a spiritual man, and what we are when the solar angel underlies our egoic consciousness can be also called the spiritual man. The solar angel, the spiritual man, has also his goal of endeavor. So his descent is not entirely avataric. The avatars descend with no possible increase of acquisition, spiritual acquisition, for themselves. They descend out of pure altruism. Of course, I cannot imagine that they do not somehow grow and expand through the process, but at least that is not, the growth is not their motive. They descend into the lower spheres from which essentially they can gather nothing and give all. But in the giving, necessarily, according to the law, much will be received. According to the ancient mantram, to those who give all is given. Okay, so the solar angel has his goal of endeavor too, as well, and that his becomes the predominant, or maybe it's this, becomes the predominant impulse once the subjugation of the vehicle in the three worlds can be brought about. Well, we are the spiritual man because a truer identity of ours lies within the egoic lotus, but the solar angel, as a higher being, once a human being in a previous solar system, has his own still higher objective, he being a still higher type of spiritual man. So the subjugation of the personality is useful for both for us as the soul in incarnation and for the Solar Angel as the guiding parental spiritual supervisor. He will then be liberated for more intensive concentration upon his own goals. Okay. Just as the fully intelligent human being can only begin consciously to function as a soul and to contact the kingdom of the soul, so only the fully active and dominant soul in which the Buddhic principle is essentially controlling, or Buddhic principle is potentially controlling, can begin to contact the state of pure being in which the monad or spirit eternally rests. And the word rest is interesting because, you know, we're told that hierarchy is a center of dynamic activity and that Shambhala is a center of perfect peace. And that may seem a contradiction, because when Shambhala intervenes, all kinds of things happen which are not peaceful. But that is the result of the lower worlds reacting to the archetypal arrangements which are found within Shambhala. So the peace of those sublime archetypes sustained by the will of the Lord of the World and by the planetary logos, that peace abides, but contact with that peace and with that proper arrangement leads to all kinds of friction and difficulties in the lower worlds, where the archetypes have not yet made their effective impress. So the Solar Angel has his own goal. And when the vehicle in the three worlds is subjugated, both the man and the Solar Angel can more easily go about the business, their business. Both the man and the Solar Angel can more easily do what they must once the personality is no longer such an obstacle. I'm, you know, always trying to get the last bit of juice out of the turnip, realizing that I can't. All right. So let's see. Subjugation of the vehicle in the three worlds is brought about. And I have to go over here necessarily and treat this subjugation of the, and let's see where we are. And it's not there. And I think it's closer to here. The subjugation of the vehicle in the three worlds is brought about. Right, when I erase important sentences, I have to know what's going on. Subjugation of the vehicle in the three worlds is brought about. Just as the fully intelligent human being can only begin consciously to function as a soul and to contact the kingdom of the soul. Okay, so I think it's going to be necessary to just copy this and bring it in here. The fully active and dominant soul. Yeah, there we are. Okay. I'm sorry for the slight delay here. Okay, in which the spirit eternally rests. Okay. Now, point three. let's see, the development of the intellect. It's not quite there. All right. Right, let's continue here after this slight rearrangement of text. Just as the fully intelligent human being can only begin consciously to function as a soul and to contact the kingdom of the soul, that's the beginning for the fully intelligent human being, for such a human being, so only the fully active and dominant soul, in which the Buddhic principle is potentially controlling, and there's much infusion of this Buddhic principle into the egoic lotus, much infusion of the Buddhic principle into the egoic lotus. So, So only the fully active and dominant soul in which the Buddhic principle is potentially controlling can begin to contact the state of pure being which the monad or spirit, in which the monad or spirit eternally rests. So before moving on, the soul or angel must, within the causal body, egoic lotus, must subdue the personality and become fully dominant. When is this dominance really taking place? And I think we could say that at the third initiation, the dominance really is occurring. The development of the intellect in man marks his fitness for the work of treading the path back to soul consciousness. The development of the Buddhic or wisdom love aspect in the solar angel demonstrates his fitness for further progression in the awareness of the state of pure being. So this is telling us something about the degree of unfoldment of the solar angel. To me, it's a little bit surprising because the solar angel has already been to the cosmic astral plane and undergoing training for its function as a solar angel within the system of Sirius. But apparently there's more to be done. And another way of thinking about the solar angel is that part of the solar angel which is infused within the egoic lotus, blending with the extended monadic consciousness of man, that part of monadic consciousness which is encapsulated within the egoic lotus. And that part, encapsulated, must receive more and more of the Buddhic principle, and the egoic lotus must become truly a expression of Buddhic consciousness, Christ consciousness. Anyway, two modes of progress are here indicated. One much higher than the other. One related to the intelligent man trying to contact soul, and one related to the solar angel, perhaps within the causal body, trying to contact the world of the monad. I guess when DK said that we are not in a position to solve the mystery of the solar angel, he really meant it, because sometimes it seems like such a high being, and other times it seems that it has certain developments imminent for it, which are not far from the kinds of developments which the human being must undertake. Anyway, complete and full functioning on the highest levels of the cosmic physical plane may or may not be something which the solar angel has achieved. You would think, perhaps, that it had achieved those abilities before venturing onto the cosmic astral plane towards Sirius, if that's the way it was done. You know, we don't know, because the number 5 was particularly potent in relation to the previous solar system. So you kind of wonder about the status of the logoic and monadic planes in the previous solar system, and whether some kind of departure of those human beings in tending towards Sirius did not occur from the atmic plane, which would be the 5th plane. I have wondered about that. The numbers of the 3 major solar systems are 5 for the previous, 7 for our particular solar system, and 9 for the coming solar system. We kind of wonder, given those numbers, which planes of the cosmic physical plane were involved. Further, for every 7, there is a 10. At least I've begun to see that. And there may always be 3 hidden planes for every 7, just as in the Tree of Life, we find Kether, Chochmah, and Bina hovering above the lower 7. So the question is, maybe these more invisible planes, invisible to the maps at least, have something to do with the inner round. So I think there are some questions that remain about the sevenfold or tenfold structure of cosmic planes, like the cosmic physical, cosmic astral, and so forth. In any case, there is a dual form of development, one for men and one for solar angels. I think we can come away from this with that assumption. So let's see. At least we know that there is a dual form of development, one for human beings and one for solar angels. Actually, you know, the degree of development of a solar angel is something that we really have to ponder. Groups of solar angels are said to combine to become planetary logoi, and if these beings are really one complete solar system ahead of us as a contemporary man, then they've had plenty of time to develop great capacities, and their Buddhic development must not be considered the same as the Buddhic development of a man. But there is a part of them which is invested in the man's egoic lotus, which in combination with the projected monadic consciousness into that egoic lotus can be developing more as a spiritualized man would develop. So there's some mysteries there, I think, and if we don't think deeply about it, we won't even detect that there are many unanswered questions. Now, we're talking about the directions in which the gaze of the solar angel is found. So far, the solar angel is looking above, towards the monadic sphere, towards Shambhala, towards the realm of pure being. It is trying to progress into the realm of pure being, and perhaps the fact that we have solar angels listed on one of those charts as inhabiting the Buddhic plane tells us something about further cosmic subplanes which it has to master. Then there is looking out in the world of souls. It's pretty much the level on which the solar angel is functioning. And now we have a third direction. And this is the one that self-centered human beings seem to think preoccupy the attention of the solar angel. the third direction in which the soul looks, and notice how he sometimes calls it soul, sometimes silver angel. You know, you have to be very alert what is meant. Is it the soul in incarnation? Is it the human soul on its own plane? Is it the human soul on its own plane substanded or supported by the presence of an aspect, a projection of the soul or angel? All these things are possible, because definitely a gift in self-awareness and in enhanced consciousness and self-consciousness is provided by the attending solar angel projecting itself into the realm where a higher form of human consciousness is found, namely within the egoic lotus. But remember, the monad, the human monad, has projected an aspect of its consciousness down into that egoic lotus as well. So I'm looking for some kind of combination of the two types of consciousness. So the third direction in which the soul looks and wherein he exercises the faculty of contemplative vision is towards his reflection, and some have, just the way Venus is considered higher than Mars, so sometimes the silver angel is considered in the feminine, correlated with Venus, and the personality correlated with Mars. So this third direction is a place where contemplative vision is focused, and it is the three worlds wherein the instrument, the personality, is found. The object of the long struggle between the higher and lower man has been to make the lower responsive to and sensitively aware of the forces emanating from the soul. As the soul contemplates his triple instrument, so this is undertaken with the help of the infused presence of the solar angel within the egoic lotus. So the solar angel, or as much of it as is within the egoic lotus, is contemplating the progress of his instrument, the man which he has to raise up at least to his feet, so to speak, at the fourth initiation, at which time, borrowing a thought from maybe the Air Force, we get our wings, maybe at that time. So it's a long struggle over millions of years, and most intensively undertaken towards the end of the struggle, which is the treading of the path of probationary discipleship and initiation. Before that, so much time has elapsed. So, three directions. The solar angel casts his eye in three directions. And we, you know, what do we want to say? When thinking of the three directions in which the solar angel casts its gaze, should we think of the solar angel on its own plane? On its own plane? I'm going to make that one too. On its own plane? So should we think of the solar angel on its own plane, which is, according to the maps, the Buddhic plane? Or shall we think of the encumbered solar angel within the egoic lotus, looking above to the monad and Shambhala, horizontally into the world of souls, world of, well, I seem to want to, world of souls, L-S, world of souls. So, in that way, within the causal body, looking out into the world of souls, and then looking downward towards the instrument of the monad, which that particular solar angel is attempting to help. So we have, you know, I think a divided position of the solar angel. That's what I'm trying to emphasize here. If I could just, let's see if I can do this, A, B diagrams. And what I mean by a divided position is that part of the solar angel, its major focus is here on the intuitional plane, but it has extended an aspect of itself into the higher mental plane, a second fall, so to speak. And it blends and amalgamates and becomes one with the consciousness of the man, which is projected downward from the monad. So which is doing the gazing? Is it that part which is invested in the egoic lotus, or is it that part which is found on the Buddhic plane and which, I remind us, apparently has already been to Sirius for training and has itself, I would say, strong intuitive faculties. So, you know, these are some of the mysteries of the solar angel. And and DK says that, as far as we're concerned, they are not soluble mysteries, not yet. I feel badly about that, but that's just the way it is. And we'll have to wait until we know more. There is an interesting relation between these three directions of contemplation and the awakening of the three major centers. Three directions of contemplation by the solar angel. So either that contemplation, that's what happens. I have to get back to my bracket. So either the contemplation is taking place from the Buddhic plane or from the higher mental plane. And when we can solve the question of the apparent division of the forces of the solar angel, then we'll be able to solve that problem. Anyway, the awakening of the three major centers, which are the head, the heart, and the throat. And those three major centers are also the centers through which the three major types of monad tend to work, with the Ajna center in its own category as director. The two chakras, which have been considered to be evocations and sometimes not to be listed among the normal lists of chakras, are the sacral center and the Ajna center. Anyway, regarding the directions of contemplation and the awakening of the three major centers, says the Tibetan, this cannot be more than hinted at owing to the abstruseness of the subject. Well, I'm certainly becoming acquainted with what he means by abstruse subjects. When I feel there's something to say and yet can't find the words or the thoughts to say it, I know I'm into the abstruse area, and maybe you have had the same experience. So many factors govern this awakening, and each aspirant has to determine for himself the order and mode of his awakening, though, as I say, largely depending upon the monadic ray with its schedules for awakening. But nevertheless, we do increasingly have something to say, and we as the soul in incarnation are increasingly alert and awake and wise and able to determine types of thought and behavior which will lead to the kind of unfoldment which is demanded by the archetype of our name, you might say, found within the egoic lotus, but found even more so within the monad. The center between the eyebrows, commonly called the third eye, has a unique and peculiar function. As I have pointed out elsewhere, students must not confound the pineal gland with the third eye. And recently I've, made available a compilation on the eye of the soul and other types of eyes within the head. And we've seen that there is this tendency to confound the third eye with the Ajna Center, or with the area of the pineal gland, or it does occur within the head, of course. Students must not confound the pineal gland with the third eye. They are related, but not the same. In the secret doctrine, they are apparently regarded as the same, and note the word apparently. We don't know what Madame Blavatsky was seeking to blind or conceal, and the casual reader can easily confound them, but they are by no means identical. Well, certainly the pineal gland is a physical gland, and the third eye is etheric in nature. The is a physical gland, and the third eye okay, I'm going to make another one, TDE, third eye. And the third eye is etheric. And now this HPB knew, but the apparent confusion was permitted until more of the etheric nature of forms was known. And the Tibetan, in his second installment with Alice Bailey, brought forth much of that type of knowledge. The third eye manifests as a result of the vibratory interaction between the forces of the soul working through the pineal gland and the forces of the personality working through the pituitary body. So this third eye is neither the Ajna Center and its pituitary physical outpost, nor is it the head center per se and its pineal physical outpost. These negative and positive forces interact and, when potent enough, produce the light in the head. Okay, so it's pretty much the way we find the electrical arc being produced between the positive and the negative poles in electrical interaction. Just as the physical eye came into being in response to the light of the sun, and that's an interesting statement, so the spiritual eye, and here I suppose he means the third, where is it? What's happened? Okay. The spiritual eye, the third eye, comes equally into response, into being in response to the light of the spiritual sun, light of the spiritual sun. So this would be the soul in this case, working through the pineal gland and in relation to the personality working through the pituitary. As the aspirant develops, he becomes aware of the light. I refer to the light in all forms, veiled by all sheaths. All forms are alike, says the Tibetan, in that they veil and hide the light, and are but externalizations of the one infinite being. My attention is really arrested on that one. Okay, so as the aspirant develops, he becomes aware of the light. I refer to the light in all forms, veiled by all sheaths, and expressions of the divine life, not just to the light within the aspirant himself. So the light is within all forms, and in fact, the forms are condensed light. As his awareness of this light increases, so does the apparatus of vision develop. It's a positive feedback loop, we might say. And the mechanism whereby he can see things in the spiritual light comes into being in the etheric body, and this would be the mechanism. It's an etheric eye, let us say, but not technically the eye of the soul. It is an etheric eye. This third eye, but not what is technically called the EOTSL, the EOTSL, the eye of the soul. This is the eye of Shiva, for it is only fully utilized in the magical work when the monadic aspect, the will aspect, is controlling. So, around the time of the third initiation, this third eye will be appearing in a manner recognizable and useful. By means of the third eye, the soul accomplishes three activities. Okay, so let's see what these may be. Yes, we've begun number six, and not too much remains. Okay, accomplishes three activities. First of all, it is the eye of vision. So we realize that this third eye is an evocation. When the soul works together through the pineal gland and interacts with the pituitary body in the azimuth center. So we have two, and then, as I said, Vulcan is involved when it comes to the great light from the soul. Vulcan is actually a planet which brings out tremendous light through matter. And Venus is involved in regard to the pituitary gland and the azimuth center, which it rules even for the developing individual. So Vulcan and Venus are married. A great light breaks forth through their marriage. You kind of wonder whether it's a Mercurian type of light in a way, arising from the marriage of Vulcan and Venus. I know in mythology it's not that, but there is a new capacity for vision which arises. The Vulcan is related to the monad through its first ray. And the intensity of the interaction as the third initiation approaches makes the third eye useful. Okay, so it is the eye of vision. By its means, the spiritual man sees behind the forms of all aspects of divine impression. The spiritual man is the man using this third eye. Spiritual man, it is we, when we have reached the point that we realize that we are the soul in incarnation and are using the third eye. He becomes aware of the light of the world and contacts the soul within all forms. Now, when the Christ said, "I am the light of the world," and DK says that the Buddha said this too, and that Hermes Trismegistus said this too, there must be the ability, of course, to see the light of all forms, the ability to see the light within all forms, and perhaps that all forms are essentially light, condensed light. Just as the physical eye registers forms, so does the spiritual eye register the illumination within those forms, which illumination indicates a specific state of being. And so the masters, I think what's being said here, the masters can assess the stage of development of the disciple, aspirant or disciple, by noting the intensity and radiation of the light, radiated from them. Okay. So this is a type of assessment which, you know, this is not open to us quite yet, but it will be. We will see the light in all forms, and we will see all forms as light. That's another step. It opens up the world of radiance. So let's make note of that. The third eye opens up the world of radiance. Okay. So different types of perception are being here discussed. Matter usually conceals the light. There is the dark light of matter, and it's related much to the light of the sign Cancer. But later, there is a radiation which is seen emanating from the form. This is more connected with Leo because Vulcan and the sun are one. So the lighted form, which sponsors the darkened form, is seen. And the light within the form, or the light from which the form arises through condensation, is seen. And eventually it is known that all forms are light itself. Okay, friends. Right. We've been talking about the activities which the third eye of the soul accomplishes. So what we'll do is we'll say that this will be an end of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 49, and this is rule 6.1. Page 209 up to 213. And we will go on to the beginning of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 50. Rule 6.2 from page 213 and onward. All right. I hope that the sort of bad luck of today that has followed me with all kinds of interruptions and technical difficulties is waning. Let's see if we can go on and do a little bit more. And soon, within one or two programs, reach the end of the Rule 6, thereby completing this particular commentary on the rules for the mental plane. All right. We'll see you soon, and thank you for thinking along with me. Bye.